Oh, you don't need me to do it. Okay.
No, God, no, it's my podcast. So why would you?
There's often been times where I've had to, people have asked me to record on the second side as well because they want my audio. I don't know why, but I just say, okay, and I send it to them.
You're outnumbered. You're outnumbered. They're threatened by what makes us unique.
I see it everywhere.
You're outnumbered. You're outnumbered. Now is the time for action.
I see it everywhere.
You're outnumbered. You're outnumbered. We're too busy fighting each other.
I see it everywhere.
You're outnumbered. You're outnumbered.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the greatest show on earth. I'm talking about the greatest show in the universe. And today with me, I have a guy. He said something really, really weird yesterday when I confirmed. He said something like Coolaboola.
Coolaboola.
And it kind of threw me off because I was like, all right, I know I attract strange humans, but, you know, that's just, even for me, that one kind of set it off as like, whoa, this is weird. But your name is Mr. Spud Murphy.
Spud Murphy. Yeah, that's right. Well, my real name is Paddy Patrick, but I don't really, I prefer Spud, to be honest. So, yeah, Spud Murphy.
Yeah, it's like a traditional, like, Irish nickname, I imagine.
Very much so. Yeah. The story goes that only people who are called Patrick Murphy are allowed to be called Spud Murphy. Because there's a lot of people out there calling themselves Spud Murphy, and they're not proper Spud Murphys at all, so... If you know someone called Joe Murphy and he calls himself Spud, he's not a genuine Spud.
Okay.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
No, it's a good piece of information now when I meet people with the last name Murphy. So Spud, you know, not to be racist or anything. Spud is a nickname for a potato.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Irish, and so there's like, is there like a whole thing about that?
To be honest, I don't know. All I know is, like, I'm Spud Murphy. My dad was Spud Murphy. His dad was Spud Murphy. And then his dad wasn't. But then his dad was. So there's a long line of Spud Murphys in my family.
You are the Spud Murphys.
Yeah. I remember the day I was given that nickname. My dad was driving by, because I'm from a very rural part of Ireland. My dad was driving by my primary school, and it was a rare sunny summer's day in Ireland. And he had his shirt off while, and he was like a kind of part-time farmer at the time. He was also a builder, and he was driving through the village right beside the school in his shirt off, and he was a fine looking man back then, you know, 25-30 years ago. And one of the guys turned around and said, there's Spud Murphy's dad. And ever since then I just had the nickname Spud as well, so that's how it goes. That's a long and boring story. I'm sorry, Ashley.
Now, that's possibly the most Irish thing I've ever heard, though. I've met some Irish people, but I've never met a Spud Murphy, and that is just, I mean, I don't know if there's a racist term for Irish people, but you're kind of hitting it. I feel like Spud Murphy would be something I would say racially.
So, well, I mean, a lot of Irish people, they don't like the... It's a weird one. Like, I don't like it myself. If somebody calls me Paddy, like, that's my name, that's fine. But if you call me A Paddy, then I'm going to get pissed off.
Call you what?
A Paddy.
Like A?
Like A Paddy, yeah.
Why would someone call you... What? What's going on over there? What are you guys drinking too much of?
No, I don't know. It's just a thing. It's like, I know that in the UK, and also in the States, like a Paddy or a Mick is an Irish person, but it's not a nice way of calling us. So if someone calls me a Paddy or a Mick,
okay, I got what you're saying.
You get me?
I got you. Yeah, that is kind of, yeah, no, I'm not going to call you that. I'll just call you Paddy or Spud. I like
Spud. Spud. Call me Spud.
Okay, good. Spud is cool. So my thing is, you're a comedian, and where does this all start? So walk us from the time you were shitting your pants and diapers to where you are now. How did you get?
I'm not actually a comedian. I do a comedy podcast.
Okay.
I don't perform comedy. I wanted to start my comedy podcast because I was a journalist. I studied to be a journalist, and I was a freelancer for many years. And I just saw that there were, like, while there's hundreds and hundreds and thousands even, hundreds of thousands of comedy podcasts. I think I was reading the other day, comedy podcasts are the biggest of the genre podcasts. And I wanted something a little bit different that was more from a journalistic kind of point of view. So it was like getting to know the who, how, why, where, what, and how of comedians and of comedy. And, you know, by speaking to just as many comedians as I could, I would get to learn about comedy, and the listeners would learn a lot about comedy as well. So I know that's not really answering your question, but that's why I started the podcast.
Okay, that's awesome.
So how did I get here? Yeah, so I'm from a very rural part of Ireland. There's only like 2,000 people in my, there's 1,000 people in my village and another 1,000 people, rednecks, around my redneck village. So I got the hell out of there when I was 18. I really didn't like growing up in a very small town, conservative place. You know, the Catholic Church ran everything where I'm from, and I found it very suffocating. But when I go back now, I mean, I learned to love the place since I moved away. I really like it now going home. But yeah, as soon as I could legally move away from my parents and away from where I'm from, I moved up to Dublin. And yeah, just wasted about 10 or 15 years of my life drinking drugs and women, and had a great time. And I was in like rock bands, and just, yeah, I was in a couple of different bands. We'd done okay, like we played a couple of gigs here and there, but it wasn't really about trying to be any way successful around. It was just making music with friends. And then I kind of got into journalism because you can hear the way I'm talking. I'm well able to talk and ramble, and I have, it's not that I'm an opinionated fucker, it's just that I like to know a lot about many things. You know what I mean?
I agree. So, I believe the term is polymath.
There you go, that's a nice one. So yeah, that's what I am. And I decided I want to get into journalism because I was a good writer, and I thought it would be the best way of channeling my kind of interest. So that's just, and then, and now with the podcast and with things that are coming in the future, I'm getting into more kind of documentary making and things like that. So yeah, okay. That's pretty much my story.
I like it. So where did you find that you had the gift? I mean, obviously, as someone else with the gift of gab who's able to talk, but it's a gift. It really is. Being able to speak to people, being able to speak to different people about different topics at any given moment. Where did you find that you had this gift? Do you remember where you were like, you know what? I'm going to do this.
God, I'm not too sure if there's any specific time. I just remember, I always kind of remember being someone who take the initiative in a group. Not always the leader, but always someone who other people would listen to. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I've always had that thing. Like, I always kind of knew I was smart. But like growing up, I was bullied a lot as a kid and all that. Probably because I was a bit of a nerd. Well, I was a nerd. But like not the kind of nerd that people like now who watch like X-Men and stuff like that. I wasn't that type of nerd. I was just someone who would read a lot of books. I didn't like comics or nerdy stuff or wrestling or anything like that. You know, I'm not one of them nerds. I was a proper nerdy. I was more like, I mean, I used to sit there with my encyclopedias and I would read about fucking Pluto.
Wow, you
know what I mean? What a geek. You know? So but it was always that in group situations, I knew that when I said something, people would listen. And I'm not sure if it was because I was good at getting a point across or if because I was just smart. You know what I mean? But then, as you kind of notice these things, and I remember there were like situations in school where, you know, there's that split second between where you can say something that the teacher wants you to say and give the right answer, or you can sacrifice that and just make everyone laugh. So I soon decided I wanted to make kind of people laugh, even though without ever wanting to get into comedy, I knew that in school I could entertain people, you know. So I don't know when I discovered it. It's probably always been there, you know. Sorry, can't answer you properly.
No, that's a good answer. It's always been there. That's kind of the answer I like to fish out of people anyway, because I think I think when it comes to sort of like a destiny sort of standpoint, you kind of know.
You do, but you know as well, it's like, I think I kind of fought against my destiny for a long, long time. Like, I remember being a kid and we would go on these like Sunday drives. This is what Irish Catholic families do, because you live far from everywhere. You get in the car on a Sunday and you drive to somewhere that sells ice cream. You walk around a bit and you come home. But in the back of the car, I would write a little short, like three-part kind of plays or TV shows. I remember watching do you remember The Streets of San Francisco? Michael Douglas was in it. I remember I used to watch that as a kid, and then I would write like similar kind of storylines in the back of the car going off to places to buy ice cream. So it was this kind of love of writing that got me. I was always very creative, and I always kind of had to be creative, you know. But then, you know, as I got older, I think I kind of fought against my creativity because I saw that, or I thought wrongly that I'd never get a job or I'd never succeed and stuff like that. And I've always kind of fought. My confidence was always the kind of worst thing about me, because I was always like too harsh on myself and way too harsh. And kind of since I've learned that that I've been my own worst enemy most of my life, since I learned that, you know, now I just kind of like, when I get that voice now, I just say, shut the fuck up, man, I'm going to do this, you know. And it sounds like I'm schizophrenic or something, and I don't know, maybe I am, I don't know. Maybe
I doubt it. I doubt it. I think if you didn't have any sort of judgment going on, that there might be something a little arrogant about you, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, true.
So I mean, it's natural for most of us to kind of check ourselves, and especially when you're in the realm of artistry. I mean, I think, I don't care what anyone says, being an artist is probably the toughest thing out there, because it is one of the jobs where there's absolutely zero guarantee, you know?
You become a doctor, absolutely.
You know you're going to get hired. You become a lawyer. If you put yourself out there as an artist, like, your self-esteem is going to struggle. You know, like, your wallet is going to struggle. Everything is a struggle when you're an artist. And so to hear you say these things, it helps me, and I know it's helping other people a lot, and it resonates with us. What is the one thing that, like, what's the one thing that keeps you going?
One thing that keeps me going is, I suppose it's that, I was saying to someone the other day, like, you're only ever really one email away from success, you know? So, like, all it takes is, I mean, I made a documentary last year, and I had pretty much done with the pitching of it. I got back great feedback from people. Some of the, like, English TV stations were interested in doing it, but, well, maybe not interested. They said they really liked it, but they couldn't do it because it wasn't their target market. Target market for the documentary doesn't watch their TV channel. So, but and the thing is that you're really only one email away, or one text message, or one phone call away from success. Because if you get in touch with the right people, and if they give you a chance, and I know that's two big ifs, but if you get that far and they like what you're doing, then, I mean, the world is your oyster. Then anything can happen, you know. So That's what drives me, because, I mean, there's plenty of times when procrastination gets the best of me and I spend an hour on Facebook and I'm like, what the hell am I doing? Instead of, you know, doing some proper work. And at the moment, I struggle a lot with social media because, even though it doesn't sound like it, I'm quite introverted. But when I'm speaking to someone like you here, actually, it's fine, because we're speaking and it's a dialogue. You know, I know it's mostly me, but it's an interview type of situation. But when it comes to writing stuff on the internet and trying to write engaging things on the internet, I find that really difficult, because here's the thing, I don't engage with people on Facebook and social media and stuff like that. So I'm like, well, I prefer Twitter and Facebook as a, what they call it, like an echo chamber, where people just say something and you react if you want to or don't want to. And I don't react to people, so I don't understand when people write back to my tweets. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, man? Leave me alone. You know, I'm just saying. But because I'm in this podcasting, I have to kind of market it. And it's very difficult for someone like me to get into marketing. I'm not a marketing type of person at all, so that's kind of a struggle. But to get back to the question, you just can't give up, because you're only one or two steps away from where you want to be. You really are, but you got to work hard to get there, because, like, a lot of being successful, I'm not successful, but I will be, but a lot about being successful is luck. A lot of people will say that, but the thing is, you got to work hard to get lucky, because by working hard, people notice you, and when people notice you, then they are more open to your pitches, your ideas, and stuff like that. So it's a hard slog. But if you just keep working at it and throw everything you can into it and make it your passion, then you know, good things will happen.
Ah, make it your passion and good things will happen. I can, when we talk about, so I want to backtrack to social media a little bit and talk about writing for social media, because that is It is difficult.
Yeah.
It's very, I know exactly what you mean, especially when it comes to like you said, like people chiming in and you're kind of like, okay, either you're missing the point or you're giving me a headache. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to do all this back and forth with you. I said what I wanted to say. And you have to realize it's like,
yeah.
People will chime in with their nonsense and you got to just kind of suck it up. But it's also so damning because I think a lot of artists, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're very sensitive.
Sure, of course, yeah. I hate when, like, if my wife does any criticism of anything I do, I'm like, shut up, you don't know what it's like. But then, like, you know, 5 minutes there, I'm like, you know what, I'm being a dickhead here.
Yeah.
Tell me that again, you know, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a psychological thing because I was bullied as a kid or something like that. But my first form of defense is attack. So when someone attacks me, I fight back. It's, you know, fight or flight thing. I fight. I always fight. I've always fought back. And it's the wrong way because if I want to get better and learn as an artist, as a podcaster, a filmmaker, or whatever, then I need to be able to take constructive criticism properly. But as well, but like you have to know the difference between constructive criticism and someone just being a fucking dickhead.
Just being a fucking asshole. Exactly. Exactly. And I think when it comes to putting your writing out there, especially your writing, because I think – And I'm starting writing. I'm writing like a TV pilot and stuff. And I'm writing this and I'm sending it just simply to like two or three friends. But I'm like, I'm bearing my fucking soul to you guys. And no matter what you say, it's not good. You know, and you can reassure me. You can say whatever you want. In my mind, I'm like, you're fucking lying. And so I think when it comes to artists and social media, I think we really do have a difficult time because we are so sensitive and like every word we write matters.
Yeah.
You know, and we still have to be on. So what is like one of your ways that you kind of disconnect from social media once you've finally gotten that, you know, that feeling where you're like, fuck this shit, I'm done.
Well, kind of what I do at nighttime now is I just put my phone into airplane mode and I put it on like a far side of the room because if it was beside me on airplane mode, I'd pick it up on a commercial break. But I just put it on the other end of the room because I'm like, nah, I'm too fucking lazy to go for that. So I try and turn it off at like a certain time at night, every night, so that I can, you know, chill out and just be with my wife, kids, and not be distracted because. Like, I kind of noticed something horrible that I was doing. Like, my boy comes home from kindergarten at, like, around 5 p.m. And I was finding that, like, he was, like, bringing me, you know, cars and Lego to play with. And I'm just, like, on Instagram, like, scrolling. Right. What the fuck am I doing? Like, my kid's here.
Yeah, right. Kid.
Don't be a douchebag. Because in 4 or 5 years' time, he's not going to want to play with me. He's going to be with his schoolmates. Yeah, so that's a thing I have to do as well. And I suppose as well is that, like, social media is such a weird thing because, like, there's so many people who use it, and it's a huge market for people like us to sell ourselves. But at the same time, you know, real life doesn't. I still believe real life doesn't happen on the internet. Even though I'm a podcaster and documentary maker and all my stuff is on the internet, like, real life is when you put down the laptop and live it. So I think people spend too much time on and kind of put too much faith in it. Like, I actually still think that podcasts grow more by word of mouth than by...
I do too.
You know, and I don't know why that is. I think it's a strange one, you know? So I think that getting your podcast out, it's more important to make something good and just tell your listeners, yeah, look, can you tell... Just tell one person about us. Right. And then they tell one person and they tell one person. And then you find it doubling and doubling. Hopefully, that's the idea anyway. I really don't think that constantly advertising your podcast and whatever on social media, I honestly don't think it helps. Like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just doing the wrong thing. If anyone wants to help me out here, you know, just write to me.
Yeah, right. <you're> Look it up. Let me know.
I don't know, actually. I don't know. It's a weird one.
You got me, buddy. Like, I think it's a word of mouth versus I do too. But I also think podcasting, it's really difficult to get started, but once you get into that rhythm, you know, and you start producing, and you, and it's a medium kind of thing too. I think certain places, only certain podcasts belong on certain places. I don't know, dude. It's a complicated, this whole entire figuring out art, like I said, and I love to highlight artists on the show because as an artist, I think it's nice for me to just bitch with someone about my struggle, but also it's good to know in a way. I know that most people who listen to this podcast are artists, so it's good to know in a way that they feel this, that they are comforted and that they know that they're not alone. And
yeah, also, sure.
Like, sure. Just so they know not to give up, because, you know, I have people coming in week after week, same exact way. Like, don't give up. Don't give up. That's it.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's a second kind of level of stuff like this as well. And it's that, like, okay, maybe you're not going to be the next Bill Burr or a Louis C.K. or these huge mammoth stars or Dave Chappelle of comedy. Maybe you're not going to make it. But, you know, maybe you're going to make it to a level where it's your job, where you do it 5 nights a week and you earn enough money to provide for yourself and your family and you're having a good time. Okay, maybe you're not going to be, you know, doing coke off the asses of hookers in Rio. But so what?
Yeah, we can all dream, though, you know?
but still, if you can get to that level where you're happy in what you're doing and you're earning enough money to live a good life, then just be happy with that, you know? And I think the key to that is longevity. Like, don't give up. It's the same thing. Don't give up. Don't give up. Don't give up. You will get there.
Right. Right. I agree. You will get there when you get there. And I think a lot of people have an unrealistic expectation.
Yeah, they do. Of course they do. But I kind of find that the longer people are doing stuff, the more their expectations fit. You know what I mean?
Right.
I have no doubts, like, there's no way my podcast will ever get like 10 million downloads. It's not going to happen because it's just too niche what I do.
Right.
You know? But I have goals and once I reach those goals, then I can, you know, start going after advertisers and stuff like that. And that's, and if I could earn, man, if I could get even like, you know, $100 per episode, I would be laughing. That would be just the best thing in the world if I was getting that, you know? And I know it's not that difficult for that. It's just that where I'm based and my listenership, there's no way I can ask for that type of money because it's a totally different currency, you know. So I just got to work harder and get more listeners. But the same thing, actually, I'll get there. You know, I'll get there. It's just about having patience and having faith in your product, I suppose, or in your content, you know.
Yep. I think you have hit the nail on the head for most of this stuff. And I kind of want to transition into your new projects. So let's talk about some of your new projects. What's going on?
Yeah, so there's two big things happening next year for me and the comedy cast. So next January, I'm going to be shooting and directing a Netflix comedy special for an Irish-American comedian who's gonna put on his show in Dublin in Ireland. On my podcast about a year ago, I interviewed an Irish American comedian called Liam Brundy. He's based in LA, does a lot of his shows in LA and Vegas as well. And we had a great interview, we stayed in touch. He's become a good friend of mine, and about, I don't know, 3-4 months ago, he called me up one day and asked me if I could recommend some places where he could shoot his special in Ireland. They said that they were going to give him the money to shoot it, and he was, you know, spitballing some ideas of where he could do it in Ireland. So I gave him lots of contacts in Ireland, and I said, yeah, this place is good, this place is good, avoid this place, da da da. And I said, you know, man, actually, I made a documentary a few months ago. Here's a link. Send it to your producers. If they want, I can help organize a camera crew or I can shoot some of it or whatever. So a couple of days later, then this he calls me back. He's like, yeah, man, he shoots me off an email and says, yeah, man, can I call you on Skype? I want some more details about the stuff in Ireland. And I'm like, yeah, man, cool, no problem. So I turn on Skype and he's sitting beside this hotshot or Hollywood producer, and he's like, Scud, man, we love your documentary. We want you to direct Liam's Netflix special. And I'm thinking, what? Holy shit. Oh, my
That's
God. What
the awesome.
Fuck? So I'm like, yeah, man, cool. Let's do it. So, yeah, next January, February, something like that. We haven't got a date. I haven't got a date set in stone yet. So I have the crew together, all the sound and stuff like that. And it's going to be a little bit different than most Netflix comedy specials because it's not just going to be one comedian there with his jokes for an hour. We're actually going to get up three or four Irish comedians who are up and coming. They would be known, maybe not so well known even in Ireland, but it's getting Irish comedy out to an American audience because I have this theory that Irish comedy is booming at the moment. It's like Seattle during the fucking grunge phase. There's so many. It's amazing, Ashley. It's amazing, Ashley. There's so many comedy clubs popping up and there's so many great Irish comedians, and there's a gap there because not a lot of the comedians are getting onto Irish TV. So there's a lot of people, out, really talented people out there who want to work and can work in television, and this is one way for some of them to get on, you know. And it's going to be amazing. I can't wait to shoot it. I've been I've been like downloading courses and in film directing and buying cameras.
Oh, yeah.
It's awesome. I can't wait. Oh, yeah. It's going to be so much fun. So much fun. Then the other thing is last year actually I got optioned by Irish TV. There's we have a couple of state TV channels in Ireland, and one of them is an Irish language one. And it's funny because the Irish language one, they actually do a lot of experimental type of TV programs, and if it works on the Irish language channel, then they will move it onto one of the bigger ones. So they want me to shoot a documentary similar to the one that I pitched to them, except it might be a little bit different. I might change it just from being a straight kind of... Well, the one I made was... it was three comedians, and it was kind of all like an interview question, and then each comedian would answer it, but it would be spliced up, so it would look like the comedians were kind of... not arguing against each other, but they were kind of against each other in the interviews. And then it would have... some gig footage as well, you know. So it's going to be something like that, but it also might turn it into a little bit of a travel doc as well, because travel docs are really big at the minute, and they'd have a better chance of you know, selling it to other countries as well, because you know, people love these travel documentaries, and putting comedians in funny situations is always going to be good television anyway. So hopefully it works out, but if not, it's still going to be cool to do the pilot anyway.
Dude, I'm so excited for you.
Thanks.
Like, I am so excited for everything that you're saying right now. And I'm so amazed at just your complete resilience and everything towards the way you view your career and the way you've talked about your career, and just the amount of hope that is in your voice is, I mean, you know, usually around, I'd say, year two or three, you lose that light between your behind your eyes, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I get you.
You're kind of like, okay, well, this is what's gonna happen, and this is what's gonna happen.
Yeah,
but you are still talking as if you are brand new to the industry, and you are loving every second of it. And I'll tell you, that's pretty dope, dude.
Thanks. Well, yeah, I mean, but I think it's because I've been waiting for this chance for so long that I know exactly what I want to do. And it's not that I'm going to do things just on my own terms or anything like that, even though I am a bit of an old kind of punk at heart. Well, a punk who likes Public Enemy. And I think that, I want help from people, but I want help from the right people. I don't want to waste my time. You know what I mean? I don't see this as my last chance to do something. Not at all. I see it as my first chance. So, and because it's my first chance, I want to do it as just as awesome as I can. I want to make as many people like what I'm making as possible, you know?
Mm-hmm. I like it. Yeah. I like everything about what you're selling. I am 100% buying it, dude. And so tell me, let's talk about Irish comedy for a minute, because you said it's booming.
Yeah.
All right. Who are we supposed to be looking out for in Irish comedy?
Oh, wow. Oh, God, there's so many. I don't know. I don't even know where to start. Danny O'Brien. Danny O'Brien's going to be big, I think. I think he's only a couple of steps away from making that crossover into being on TV a whole lot more. Connor Drum is very good as well. Jer Staunton, he's brilliant. And Martin Ongolo, they actually have a podcast together called Canary in a Comedy Goldmine. They're class. Brian Gallagher is another one. Keith Fox. I haven't given you any women. Niamh Maron, Emma Doran, Laura Byrne. Go on. That's a lot. Google those and you're going to get a good taste of Irish comedians.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. Oh, shit. There's one I forgot. I can't leave him out. He's my co-host on my podcast, Seamus Kelly. Check him out.
Yeah, dude, you can't leave a damn co-host. That's terrible.
Dark, evil, and twisted.
So he's like your last guy. Like, you're like, yeah, this guy works with you weekly and shit. And you're like, you know what? Okay.
He's going to kill me. When he hears this. Nah.
That's hilarious. That is really funny and pretty dope, actually. So you have your comedy podcast. What is your focus? Like, let's walk through your show.
I suppose I have to tell you how it started. When I started it, it was just very long-form interviews where it could be from 20 minutes up to an hour and a half or longer sometimes. I know, it was really long, some of them. But it was just... It's kind of in the style of like a Joe Rogan kind of thing. You just start with one question, they lead to more and more and more and more, and you just go down foxholes and this, that, and the other. And I would especially as well speak about anything that they had a particular interest in. So if someone spoke about mental health issues, we would speak about that, or sexual abuse issues, or feminism, or anything, whatever they were into, we would speak at length about that. This year, we're 14 episodes in. Tomorrow, I've changed the format a bit. Instead of being these long form interviews, I've changed it to be a bit more of a entertainment-y style of podcast. So now we have, it's myself and Seamus Kelly, the co-host. We speak for about 10 minutes at the start, and then we have an interview with a stand-up comedian or someone who works in comedy, and we have, so that's about 15-20 minutes, and then we have another 10 minutes of myself and Seamus. Then we go to a musical interview. So it's usually someone from an unsigned band from England, Ireland, or the US. Had our first US guest on last week, on next week. And then for the last 10 minutes, then we speak about a legend of comedy. So someone that Seamus and I both know and love from the world of comedy. So we've spoken about the likes of Robin Williams, Billy Connolly, Joe Brand, and this week we have Richard Pryor. So so you can hear that there's three different sections. There's two interviews, a legend of comedy, and then there's myself and Seamus as well, and we just kind of speak about what's been going on in the world, and just kind of we can be a bit evil and stuff, but we just try and be funny, you know.
I think I do. And I like the setup. I like that you guys have it in sections. And so my question would be, does your guest, when they come on, do they stay throughout the duration of the show, or is it just one small interview?
No, they don't stay. No. They just usually they're pre-recorded like a good bit before they come on.
Okay. I see how you do it. What is your favorite part about podcasting in general?
This is going to sound lame. Just speaking to different people about comedy, not just comedy now, we have music as well, but yeah, just speaking to the different people, because I know that, like, you know, if I had just gotten a normal job in journalism writing about, you know, road accidents or whatever, I never would have gotten to speak to these amazing comedians. And we've had some famous people on it, and some people who probably will be famous in years to come, but that's not really important for me. What's important to speak to these people is just getting to know a little about how they feel about their art or their craft or their medium, and just you know, letting them speak about things that interest them, you know, because you know yourself, everyone has a story, and it's very easy. I find it very easy to interview people, because it's just kind of like, it's fun as well, but I just find it very easy to ask people the questions. You know what I mean? Like, so, some people are like, oh, I couldn't have asked him that. But I'm like, why not? Like, I want to know.
Yeah, you know? Right? Like, I have a question. I need an answer for.
Exactly.
And yeah, I would rather than speculate, I'll go directly to you. That's actually one of the things I 100% agree with. And I think it's weird that people get so weirded out by questions.
Yeah, I suppose it's because a lot of people, it must be a privacy thing. Like, some people are like, well, I couldn't ask that question because I wouldn't like someone to ask me that question. But the trick about interviewing is that you have to make the interviewee so comfortable that they'll open up.
Right.
You know, that's it really. And I know that kind of thing, it's hard. Like, especially like I watch some of the American talk shows like Jimmy Kimmel and Seth Meyers and those types of things. And they only have, I think it's 7 or 8 minutes to get someone comfortable and to ask them questions. But the thing is that you can't do it as well. So something like a podcast where you have longer, you're able to do that much better, I think, you know. Although I haven't saying that, I do think that longer form interviews are going to come back to TV. I can see that coming, because I think what American TV has done is it has treated their viewers as idiots for too long, and people are switching off and they're going to Netflix and HBO and all that kind of thing. So they're going to have to get people back, and to get them back, if you treat your audience like an idiot, they're going to act like an idiot.
Thank you.
So if you treat them with respect, then you'll get a good audience, you know?
Thank you. I agree. And I think that's it. It's hard almost as an American, I think, to produce, because I like to produce things with substance. And I've found that's not really selling these days, because we have it's maybe I'm just being an arrogant piece of shit, which is very, very likely. But what I found is substance isn't selling on TV. It isn't selling in music. What it is people are looking for something quick, fast, and in the hurry. You know what I mean? People are looking for something just get right to a dick joke. They won't like work their, you know, there used to be a time in comedy where you could make a dick joke, but it was so classy and so well done, and it was a good metaphor, and it was a simile. It was every sort of article of speech you could put in, and it was just amazing.
Now
it's just like all you do is say penis, and I think that's an American thing. And so when I see it, it's like, what's the point of even keeping going? I am not a superhero. I do not want to single-handedly bring back, you know, the beauty of dick jokes. But when I hear it from someone who's not an American, someone who's foreigner, sorry, hopefully that word doesn't offend you.
No,
it does. It offends people sometimes. When I hear that, I'm like, he gets it.
Yeah.
I watch Irish TV. So could you point me in the right TV, comedy TV direction for Irish TV so I can go look that bad boy up?
Oh, well, this is the thing. You see, there's nothing on Irish TV remotely to do with Irish comedy, because the people who run Irish TV are complete fucking morons. except, and not because I'm doing the pitch, but except for the people who run the Irish language station, because they have the smallest budget of the three TV channels. And they're the ones who make very, very good documentaries. And they make very good documentaries, not only about history, but about the Irish language. And they have they don't have much comedy, but hopefully that'll change. They do a lot with music as well, really, really a lot of Irish music as well. On Irish TV, they would rather pay, Hollywood, whoever makes, not 2.5 Men, what's that other piece of shit? The Nerds, Big Bang. They would rather play reruns of The Big Bang Theory than invest in some Irish comedians and put them on TV. And the thing is that, you know, they would say that the market decides, but it's complete and utter bullshit. The market decides because they keep lowering themselves to the lowest common denominator. That's the problem, you know. And instead of having more, now, look, comedy isn't highbrow. It can be highbrow, but comedy is something that's kind of meant to make you think differently about certain subjects. And instead of them investing in local Irish comedians to put something on TV, they would just rather take the easy option and pay 50 grand per episode to show The Big Bang Theory or whatever it is. I don't know, 50 grand. I just made that up.
I agree. And I like what you said, comedy is not, you know, comedy is meant to make you think. Especially when it comes to very uncomfortable topics. I think comedians really, really are a good, not negotiator, ambassador for entertaining ideas that are otherwise taboo to talk about, you know, like racism, which is a big one in the comedy world, or, you know, any, you know, gay rights, any of that stuff. I think comedy is really the place where we have, we almost have like a free reign.
Yeah.
You know, like I can say whatever I want as long as there's a microphone in my hand and I'm on a stage. But if I get off that stage and have the same conversation with the person just laughing, they probably won't find it as funny.
Exactly. It's true. No, but the thing is all about TV is because these broadcasters are failing really to the internet, they need to pander to unoriginality. They need to stay the same so that they keep the people who are already watching. And that's the thing you see. So they're not pulling in new viewers, and they don't think about even trying to pull in new viewers because they've pretty much given up on new viewers. I've said that three times now. It's weird. Because they know that they've lost that battle. Well, they think they've lost that battle to YouTube and Netflix, etc., and Amazon. But the thing is, the battle is it's certainly not over, and they can get back. They can get young viewers. The only thing is, they just have to make programs that the young people want to watch. Young people don't want to watch boring comedies that their parents watch. That's very middle of the road, and it's unrisky and stuff. They want to watch new comedians that are risky and stuff like that. So I think what a lot of these broadcasters need is they need a shot of youth working in there, you know, so that they'll say, right, let's have an idea. Let's try and do this for 5 episodes. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, well, whatever. We only lost 50,000, which is nothing to these people, you know. So hopefully in the future we will see more on. Because I think these things kind of come in circles or go in circles. And I think we will see it. I just can't predict when, you know. I just hope I'm there, though.
Right. Right, right. See, yes, you get it, dude. It is so nice to talk to you. And, like, you are a breath of fresh air in the world of artistry and comedy. And I'm telling you, man, if I were to run away and decide to start my own network, I would definitely call you to be a programmer.
Thank you, Ashley.
Do that. I trust you.
Thank you very much.
So what are your favorite shows? Like, well, as we wrap up, before you promote all your shit, which I'm definitely going to give you time to do, what are your favorite, what are you watching right now?
To be honest, I'm kind of working my way through comedy specials, really. And I'm just, I'm watching every single special I watch the first 15 minutes of. And if I like it after 15 minutes, I'll watch all of it. Even if it turns to shit after 30 minutes, I'll still give it to them. I'll watch it all. But because, you know, no one can like every comedian. Right.
You're not supposed to.
No, but like, it's got to the stage, actually, where, like, I was watching, because my wife just had a daughter there, like, two months ago. And for the first, like, 6 weeks when I was up feeding the baby at nighttime, I would just watch, I was watching at least one special per night kind of thing. So I've watched just tons and tons and tons of stuff. And so my favorite recently has been Neil Brennan. Neil Brennan was Dave Chappelle's writer for many, many years, you know. And I really like that. I think he doesn't just do stand-up. He has three sections. So he has three microphones on stage. One, he does one-liners. Second, he does a normal kind of stand-up. And then the third one is very personal and emotional and stuff. And I think it's a great, I think it's a really cool way of doing a stand-up show. I don't think anyone else can ever do it again because now it's been done, you know, unless they do five mics or something like that. But I think it's really, really good. I think people should watch it. It's a great take on stand-up.
I definitely will. Make sure you send me a link to some of your favorite, or just the names and everything. So, because you listed a bunch of comedians, and there's no way I'm going to remember all that by heart as much as I'd love to.
Yeah, no problem.
So definitely make sure you send them to me. And dude, I don't want to ever not talk to you. Okay? We are on the same path. We're in the same way. If you ever find something hilarious, make sure you send it to me. And I will probably do likewise, because I believe that's the only way people can learn about new things is if they are taught.
Well, look, actually, I'd love to have you on my podcast as well someday.
Yeah, whenever you want, dude.
Let's do it.
I enjoy being on people's podcasts. I enjoy podcasting.
Great. I'm trying to think of some other shows to watch as well. There's a really good British panel show called 8 out of 10 Cats Do Countdown. Countdown was a TV show, like a wordplay TV show for old people. It's on Channel 4 during the day. But at nighttime, you know Jimmy Carr. Jimmy Carr hosts it, and it's really rude and funny, and they have some brilliant comedians, not just kind of the usual the same old comedians. They usually have at least one, sometimes two kind of new comedians on as well, so they give people a chance on it. Check that out for you guys in America. It's very, very funny. It's called 8 out of 10 Cats Do Countdown. It's kind of long, it's a shit name, but sorry, I didn't pick it. Yeah, that's it, really. I mean, yeah, I could give you loads of things, but there's no point.
No.
Blackadder. Look at Blackadder. If you don't know what British and Irish comedy is, Blackadder is probably the best sitcom. It's pretty old, but yeah. And not season one. Season one is shit. All the other seasons are amazing.
Well, when I think of British comedy or Irish comedy, well, really British mainly, my first thought is always The Inbetweeners. You ever see that show?
Oh, gosh, yeah, of course, yeah. Oh, man. You know the nerdy kid?
Yeah.
That was me in school. It's pretty much my life on fucking tape. Like, it's so embarrassing. I watched that with my wife. I watched that with my wife, and she's like, that's you, isn't it? I was like, yeah.
Wow.
Exactly me. Like, it's terrible. You know, it's just fucked up. But it's brilliant. I love it.
I do, too.
It's a great show, yeah.
Before we go, I want you to let everybody know what you got going on.
Cool. So, look, like social media-wise, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so check out my website, comedycast.com. If you want to find me on social media, the easiest way is just go to the website and you'll find the icons there for Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Instagram is probably the best one because every day, or every second day at least, we put up little one-minute clips from the previous week's podcast. So that's probably the best way. People really like those little videos, so we're going to keep doing them. Yeah, what else? There is a YouTube channel, but I don't put too much on it anymore because YouTube are nasty to comedians, and I'm even though I'm not a comedian. But yeah, and as well on my Comedy Cast, on the comedycast.com website, you'll see that there's the documentary that I made for those pitches, for the Netflix pitch and for the Irish TV pitch as well. So you can watch that on the left-hand side of the page as well. And if you click on it, I know this is getting complicated. It's in a very, very small box that I can't change because I don't know anything about web design. But if you click on it, then it'll bring you to YouTube and you can watch it properly. And you can watch some of the Irish comedians that I was talking about. They're in it. So thanks, Aisling. This is really awesome, Aisling. I got your name wrong. Aisling. Because Aisling is an Irish girl's name.
No, it's just Aisling. It's the American name.
Thank you very much, Aisling. I really, really, really enjoyed it.
You are fantastic, dude, and I'm really excited. Like I said, if you ever want me on, of course I'll be on your podcast, but always, if you find new stuff, make sure you send it over, dude, because I enjoy comedy. I enjoy laughing. I think it's probably the safest drug in the entire world. I really do. It's just been a pleasure, man, so I'd love to have you back on maybe after or right before your stuff happens, before you get better. You know what I mean? Like, too good for me and too big for your britches and all that.
Come on. I want to be good to the podcasters because...
Yeah, don't forget us little people.
Yeah, I'll always appreciate people who give me a shot, you know, because, I like to give people a shot on my podcast as well. So I will always appreciate stuff like that. So thank you very much, Aisling.
No problem. Thank you. All right, man. You have yourself a great day. Everybody, don't forget, this is Spud Murphy. He's the only Spud, by the way. He's legit. So you can find me, of course, on Instagram, Who's This_Live. You can find me on Facebook, Who's This? Network. Instagram, again, Who's This_Network. And Who's This.Network. It's pretty much just Who's This. If you just Google Who's This, you can find all my shit. And I will be back on another day with another person. You guys stay classy. I'll stay trashy, and together we can figure out how to take over this world. You're outnumbered. You're outnumbered.